from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Monday evening, we do welcome in. It's time for another Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. We've got you till 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a lot coming up on the program. As always, if you want to chime in, you can call, text, or tweet 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900 is how you call or text. Or if you tweet at me, it's at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. Three guests scheduled for the program today. We're going to talk with Aaron Schatz coming up in about 10 minutes or so, and we'll talk with him about all things NFL football. Interesting weekend in the NFL. It feels like this was a weekend where it was the negative stories that really rang out with different things that ended up happening. The Nick Sirianni, the Eagles coach, kind of going after the fans of the Browns, which was just a really weird situation. The Cowboys just looking absolutely terrible. You know, even the Jaguars, you got their head coach calling for like new culture when he's the guy who puts the culture in play. Like, it was just one of the top players in all of the NFL from a defensive standpoint in Hutchinson goes down. So there weren't a lot of good stories this week in the NFL, but we'll talk with Aaron Schatz about that coming up in just a few minutes. Next hour, we're going to go heavy hockey in the 7 o'clock hour. Andy Strickland from Bally Sports Midwest, part of the Blues TV broadcast. He'll join us. We'll talk through what the Blues have done for the first three games as they get ready for their home opener tomorrow evening. Good news from the Blues today that Oscar Sundquist back on the ice. He continues to come back from that ACL, and good to see him as a full participant in practice. And then, under the category of things you might not have heard about over the weekend, but things worth talking about, how about the Lindenwood hockey team? They go to Madison, Wisconsin, and knock off the number 9 Badgers on Friday, almost swept the weekend. They were up in the Saturday game and ended up losing in overtime on Saturday. But that is, man, that's a fantastic weekend. And, you know, we don't talk a lot of Lindenwood hockey on this program. That's not something that really moves the needle all that often, but man, oh man, oh man, what a spectacular weekend for them. So Bill Muckalt, their head coach, is going to join us at about 7:35, and we will talk through what was a really special weekend for them in Madison and what really the expectations are for that team. I love college hockey. I love college hockey. And I would love to have a legit program nearby here to be able to support. I spent 6 years of my life living in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and they've got two really good college hockey programs there in Colorado College, which is it's a D3 school, but they always have one men's sport and one women's sport that's D1, and men's college hockey is their D1 sport, and they're very, very, very good. Of course, a lot of Blues fans are familiar with Colorado College because of Jaden Schwartz, who went there. And then Air Force has a pretty good program as well in Colorado Springs. So I spent many years spending many weekends going to college hockey games, and I would love for the St. Louis area to have a program that is consistently ranked and doing special things, and that was a really good start for Lindenwood, so congratulations to them. And again, Coach Muckalt's going to join us coming up at about 7:35 or so. The weekend that was in sports, you know, the Blues played on Friday against Vegas, and they were down a couple goals, got back within a goal twice, and then they were never able to get the equalizer, so they weren't able to come back in that game the way they did the first two games. But that was a really good opening road trip for them, winning 2 out of 3 games. The college football weekend locally, I mean, I don't know what you really learn. I don't think you do learn from anything. We had Gabe DeArmond on Friday before Mizzou played UMass on the road, and I think I asked him, what can we learn about Missouri this weekend? And he said absolutely nothing, and he was right. Missouri goes to UMass and wins 45-3, and I don't feel any better or any worse about Missouri than I did, you know, 72 hours ago. That's a game that they shouldn't have played. We did a sports roundtable earlier today, Kevin Wheeler and myself, along with Bernie Miklas. And we're gonna, by the way, you can hear that tonight at 8 o'clock here on KMOX. I'll give a little piece of it away right now. Bernie made the comment on the sports roundtable that Missouri should have never played that game. An SEC team going to UMass to play a bad team in front of 12, 13,000 people. Like, that's just, it's not to sound arrogant about things. I'm sure if people heard this from non-SEC markets, that this would sound arrogant. But I think Bernie was right when he said that's beneath Missouri. It was. It was beneath Missouri. There was nothing to be gained from that game. Nothing. Maybe if they would have played that game before Texas A&M, so at least they had, like, to use it as a dry run to go through an away game process, because Texas A&M was their first road game of the year. Maybe there's a little bit of value right there. But generally speaking, no value. You don't learn anything about them. Illinois got a scare. Man, they got a big scare against a not very good Purdue team. But sometimes, you know, I've learned in sports more often than not, you don't begrudge a victory, even with Illinois being ranked in the top 25 and playing at home against a bad Purdue team that was on their second quarterback. To me, that actually is, that's one of those, well, a win is a win and you take it sort of situations. They win 50-49. Purdue tried to go for two late, couldn't do it, and Illinois comes away with the victory. So they're now 5-1, and their schedule, they're in a great spot. Now, the next two games could be tough. They're likely to lose their next two games. Maybe not home against Michigan. We'll see. But definitely at Oregon. Those are the next two games. Losable games. Losable games. The Michigan game is also a winnable game. I'm not sure about Oregon. But then after that, home against Minnesota, home against Michigan State, at Rutgers, at Northwestern. This is a team that could have even losing against Michigan and Oregon, they could potentially have a three-loss season. That is absolutely fantastic. So good for Illinois. All right, so we've got a lot coming up on the program today. As mentioned, a number of guests coming up in just a moment or so. We are going to talk with Aaron Schatz. He's going to join us to talk all things NFL. That's in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It was an interesting NFL weekend. We're going to welcome on to the program Aaron Schatz, Chiefs Analytics Officer with FTN Fantasy. You want to talk football, you're about to hear it. He's as good as it comes to talk all things NFL. Aaron, we appreciate you taking some time. And I was just talking about this a few moments ago. It feels like this was a weekend where there was a lot of negative stuff that happened. The Nick Sirianni talking to the crowd, the way the Cowboys lost, some comments by Doug Peterson, the Jaguars head coach, the Hutchinson injury. Like, this was a very negative kind of focused weekend for the NFL. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, and a lot of blowouts. Even the games that were close were not as close as the final score. I mean, the Eagles were only close to the Browns because the Browns returned a block field goal for a touchdown, which is a really fluky play. It was a weird week. I mean, you know, gamblers did well because favorites won, but it was a weird week.
What's and I know you're connected in with the Eagles. Just you follow along very closely with what Philadelphia's got going on. The Sirianni thing, and he apologized for it today, but he went after Cleveland fans, and it felt like he was trying to almost shield himself from that by bringing his kids up to the post game press conference. That whole thing was just very weird.
Yeah, and my feeling is that if the Eagles win this season, that will be forgotten. And if the Eagles finish outside the playoffs, people are going to bring this up all the time, and Sirianni's going to lose his job. But, like, you know, I mean, the fact is that, you know, sparring a little bit with fans of the other team is going to be pretty forgotten in the long run if the Eagles continue to win games. But they just haven't been that impressive this year. They're actually only 21st in our DVOA ratings based on this year's performance. And, like, you know, they did beat Cleveland, like I said, more than the final score shows, but Cleveland is terrible.
We've spoken before, and you have complimented the Eagles as being one of the more forward-thinking organizations in the NFL. The NFL is one of the sports that's taking a little longer to really embrace analytics and data, and the Eagles seem to be ahead of the curve. What do you make of this year's Eagles team seemingly playing below expectations?
Well, I think the expectations were too high. I think people don't realize how much they fell apart at the end of last year. That defense was really poor. And, I mean, they've been better on defense than they were last year and a little bit better on offense than they were last year, but not as good as people expect. I said this a lot in the preseason. I think they missed Jason Kelce, even though the offensive line is playing well. They've had the injuries, so they haven't had A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith for a couple of games. That's obviously hurt them. And, you know, Bryce Huff hasn't been the player that they thought he was going to be when they signed him in free agency. We know he doesn't play the run well, but he hasn't been that great with the pass pressure either.
All right, let's get to the Cowboys. They lose to the Lions, just get run off the field, 47-9, the final score. They're 3-3. They have lost their home games this year. What is this who they are, or does this team have a turnaround in them?
I mean, I feel like things should be better for this team. They miss Brandon Cooks. He'll come back in a few weeks. They miss Micah Parsons. He should be back in a week or two. They need Deron Bland back. He should be back in a week or two. In the end, I think that Dallas is not as good as they've been in past years and better than they've been this year. They're probably like 14th or 15th in the league, which is not going to get it done as far as making it to the playoffs. And I'm sure there's going to be a house cleaning in the offseason. But, I mean, Dak Prescott is better than he's shown in the first six games of the season, and I'm sure he'll play better going forward.
Nobody's feeling sorry for Jerry Jones, but I mean, I'm sure you saw the video of his post-game media session. He looked shook after that game.
Well, they got slaughtered at home. They got slaughtered. And the Cowboys are actually worse than you think, because the Cowboys have the number one special teams unit in the league. So if you took the special teams away, they'd be worse off than they already are.
The other side of that for the Lions, yeah, they were able to celebrate a victory, but they lost one of the top players defensively in the NFL, and they're not saying that he's done for the season, but it was a gruesome injury for Aiden Hutchinson as he goes down. We'll see what might happen. Dan Campbell said a 4 to 6 month recovery process, so if it's on the lower end of that, maybe we see him at some point, but it really feels like Hutchinson is likely done for the year.
Yeah, probably. It's a position where they do not have a lot of depth, and there's not a lot available out there, right? I mean, you can try to figure out what the heck is going on with Haason Reddick, who has a new agent, and trade for him, I suppose. There's been some talk about Max Crosby. I don't know why the Raiders would want to do that. If you look at teams that might be considered out of it with players who are going to be free agents next year, you end up with Dennis Gardeck of the Cardinals. Like, there's just not a lot of edge rushers available unless you can figure out what is Haason Reddick's deal.
So the Jaguars lose again. The expectations were a little bit higher for them this year than they have played to so far. And then Doug Peterson, and I've always liked Doug Peterson, but he goes out and says that they need a culture change. He's the head coach. To me, those words should not be coming out of the mouth of a head coach, because in many ways, you're saying the culture that you've helped create isn't good enough.
They need a new defense is what they need. They are the worst pass defense in the league, and by like a lot. Like a lot. Like, the offense has been disappointing, no doubt, but the offense has been like slightly below average, right? The defense, especially the pass defense, has been horrible. And you're right. I mean, who makes the culture? The head coach makes the culture, right? So, I mean, I think everybody feels if they lose to the Patriots this week, he's gone. And I don't know what happens if they beat the Patriots, because it's a convenient time when they come back from London, would be a convenient time to make a change anyway. But a change doesn't really do anything for them. Their year is pretty shot. When you start 1-5, you're pretty out of it.
Looking around the NFL with our friend Aaron Schatz, are the Bears good?
The Bears are not as good as you think, because they've played a very easy schedule so far. Their schedule gets much harder the rest of the way. Okay, the second half of the season, they have to play all their division games, plus they have to play San Francisco. They play Washington this week, which has a bad defense but a great offense, right? And the Bears are better than I thought they would be, especially on defense, by the way. But they're not as good as you think. They struggle to stop the run. And Caleb Williams has improved a lot over the last few weeks, but let's see what he does against some harder defenses when the time comes for them to play like the Vikings.
Bills and Jets tonight, and it seems like more of the same for Buffalo. They got out to that 3-0 start. You're starting to really believe in them, and now they've lost their last two games, admittedly against good teams in the Ravens and Texans, and the Ravens were desperate when they played them, and the Texans are having a really solid season. But I think people who are Bills fans continue to try to find reasons that this can be the year where they get over that proverbial hump. And to me, from a long ways away, it feels like it's just more of the same for Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, they're not as good as they've been in years past, but they're still pretty good on offense and defense. No James Cook tonight. Make sure you get him out of your fantasy lineups. But the Jets defense has struggled against the run, so I expect to see plenty of running with Ty Johnson and Frank Gore Jr. How about that?
How about that, indeed? Jets are supposedly going to run a little bit more now. That's the word with Downing taking over as the play caller. It's kind of funny that they have Aaron Rodgers. They brought him in, and the rumblings out there is that he had something to do with the head coaching firing, and maybe that was connected to the possible demotion of Nathaniel Hackett. Hackett still ends up getting demoted, and now you got a guy who's going to be the OC, and we'll see what it actually looks like tonight. But if they start going to a run-heavy offense, that seems kind of against everything else that they've been doing.
The Jets' offense is next to last in the league in rushing efficiency this year. Their offensive line was supposed to be so much improved. It has not been. They have had trouble blocking. Somebody needs to free Breece Hall and find him some holes to run through. Braylon Allen also. They've got good backs, but the line is not blocked anywhere near as much as we expected them to. So I don't know if running the ball is the answer for them.
The Davante Adams has been connected to both the Bills and the Jets, and now the most recent report is maybe he doesn't get traded. If he does get traded, what's the team that he's been connected to where he would have the ability to go in there and actually make significant change?
Oh, both of those teams. He would absolutely make significant change. There's been talk about Kansas City, but I can't see the Raiders doing that. Al Davis would roll over in his grave. A really interesting idea is Washington. Imagine Terry McLaurin and Davante Adams with Jaden Daniels throwing them both the ball. But Adams is very talented. So whichever team he goes to, there's no team that's talking about trading for Davante Adams where you're like, well, they already got three really good wide receivers, so he's not going to play that much. Like any team he goes to, he's an upgrade.
Aaron Schatz is fantastic talking all things football. You can follow him on Twitter at AschatzNFL. That's A-S-C-H-A-T-Z. Let's do that again. A-S-C-H-A-T-Z-NFL. Aaron, always appreciate your time. Hopefully you can catch up again down the line.
Absolutely. The site is ftnfantasy.com/DVOA.
All right, perfect. FTNFantasy.com/DVOA. Yeah, a lot of times we talk about it with Aaron. He is the creator of DVOA, which is a fantastic metric to be able to assess football teams. You heard him make reference to that. So FTNFantasy.com/DVOA is where you can check out everything that he's got going on. And again, at AschatzNFL is the Twitter account. We'll take a break, and we'll talk a little baseball coming up in just a moment as the Cardinals have named their minor league player and pitchers of the year. Also, we'll get you updated on what's going on in the playoffs. The first of two championship series games is coming down to the final moments. We'll get you updated on that and tell you what else is going to be happening tonight as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's a great bar sports open line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so. Call, text, tweet 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900 is how you call or text. If you tweet at me, it's at Matt Pauly on air. I'm just curious. This is one of those things where, hey, I'm on the radio and I get to ask this question and kind of crowdsource a little bit. I am curious. Text in. I'm just going to do a very unofficial straw poll. Of the four teams that are still alive in the Major League Baseball playoffs, Guardians, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, as a Cardinal fan, if you're not a Cardinal fan and you're listening, I'm not too No offense, I'm not real worried about you here for a second. I'm just for Cardinals fans, hardcore, all-in Cardinals fans. Of the four teams that are alive, who do you have the pool for? You know, before this series, it was the Padres for a lot of Cardinals fans because of Mike Schilt, obviously. So he's out. Schilt's gone. There's lots of former Cardinals bouncing around these teams. That's been a large topic of conversation. So it's not like there's one team with a bunch of former Cardinals. There's former Cardinals scattered throughout this postseason. So what's the team? Text in. That's the question. I'm just curious. You could text in 314-436-7900. If you want to explain why, feel free. If you just want to leave the one word, Mets, Guardians, Yankees, Dodgers, you can do that. But text on in 314-436-7900. As a Cardinal fan, which team are you kind of pulling for right now of the four teams that are still left here in the Major League Baseball playoffs? It's the Mets for me. I've talked about it. I think they're fun. They've got a lot of personality. They've had as many big moments that kind of draw you into the games as anybody. And then the stupid thing that I keep coming back to, but it's fun. Every team that has ever knocked the Brewers out of the playoffs has gone on to at least appear in the World Series. For every Brewers series, not just National League, going back to when they were an American League club, every time the Brewers have been in the playoffs, the team that knocked them out of the playoffs went on to the World Series. So something like that's kind of fun and quirky, and I like that as well. So that's just that's the cherry on top for me. I think there's reasons to, you know, it seems like the two like Cardinals related narratives of the Major League Baseball playoffs for the last couple of days is the former Cardinals thing. Especially, you know, Lane Thomas hit the grand slam. Okay. But there's a lot of guys. Jack Flaherty yesterday looked really good. He was carrying no hitter for a while. And, you know, sometimes there's revisionist history on all of this. In fact, I've mentioned this a few times. Coming up at 8 o'clock tonight, we're going to have our sports roundtable where I'll be joined by both Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler for an hour. And we get into this a little bit, so not to give away too much now, but specifically to those two guys, like Lane Thomas wasn't anything overly special, and the Cardinals had a bunch of young outfielders who, to be fair, those young outfielders aren't around anymore, and they did not do what Cardinals fans and what the Cardinals were hoping for them to do. But nobody was really upset about that trade in that moment, especially when you needed starting pitching. And you know, Jack Flaherty, look at what happened last year when he went to Baltimore. He was terrible. He was terrible in Baltimore last year. He was so much better as a Cardinal last year than he was as an Oriole. He made that one first start after getting traded to Baltimore, and he looked really good, and then he just fell apart. He lost his spot in the rotation. He had to take a one-year deal, and what happened? He went to a really smart organization, and Detroit unlocked him. They figured him out. They knew what he needed to do to get back on the right track, so give all the credit to the Detroit Tigers for figuring him out, and now he's been pretty good, and he was really good yesterday. I do think that's one of the themes of these four teams, by the way. You know, because everybody's trying to do the, hey, what do we learn from these four teams and apply it to the Cardinals? I get it. Like, again, that's kind of the other narrative that's gone along with it. And the low-hanging fruit of all that, and this is not me saying that you shouldn't spend money. This is not me saying that whatsoever. I love it when baseball teams spend money. I am totally in favor of the Cardinals spending more and more and more money. No issues there. But the low-hanging fruit answer there is that these teams spend money because three of the four teams have pretty heavy payrolls. The Mets, the Dodgers, and the Yankees. The Guardians are obviously the exception, but 75% of the teams in the championship round here in the Major League Baseball playoffs spend a lot of money. Okay, that's fine. I think if you want to apply what they do to what the Cardinals can learn, it's not about spending money because teams can also spend. The New York Mets spent tons of money last year, a lot more money than they're spending this year, and they were not a good baseball team. What did they do? They started spending money in a smart way. How do you spend money in a smart way? You start making smart baseball decisions and you start putting in all the infrastructure and technology and the data that we talk about oh so often. And that's what the Mets started doing when they brought in David Stearns, a guy who basically built the current version of the Brewers, and they let him come in to do his thing, but are going to finance him just a little bit more than the Brewers would finance him. That the Mets became a very scary team in that moment. If you listen to me a lot, you know that I've talked a lot about me being worried that the Mets are going to turn into Dodgers East, because the Dodgers are a team that spend gobs and gobs of money, and then they do all the other things right as well. They do player development right. They do drafting right. They do scouting right. They do all of it. They do all of it right. And you would hope that teams that throw money around would do it right. If I'm an owner of a Major League Baseball team and I've got billions of dollars and I'm investing hundreds of millions into my baseball team, or at least tens of millions into my baseball team, I would want to make sure that I'm getting bang for my buck. And last year, the New York Mets, no bang for buck. Negative bang for buck. What's the opposite of bang? Whatever that is, that's what they got for their buck. So they went and they put things in place, and they are continuing to put things in place where they can get the bang for the buck. And I think that's probably Mets owner Steve Cohen. I think that's probably what he learned. I think he walked into ownership of that team and said, I'm a billionaire. I've got all the money in the world. I've got a team in the number one media market. I'm wiping myself with $100 bill. Like, that's where he's at. I can just throw money after money after money after money at the Major League roster, and we'll be good. No, not you won't. Not in Major League Baseball. You got to do the other things too. And he learned that. He learned that very quickly, and he brought in somebody who was able to do that. And so that's why, again, bringing this back to the Cardinals, that's why I think it's so important. Now, they were throwing money at the Major League roster, not like the Mets did last year. This is not an apples-to-apples comparison. Don't tell me how wrong of a comparison this is. Like, I understand, not apples-to-apples. Max Scherzer is not Kyle Gibson. I get it. But what did the Cardinals do this year to try to kind of get to have a certain level of success at the Major League level and at least be a postseason club? They threw money at the Major League roster. Look, the Cardinals payroll, you may sit here and think that it should have been more. The Cardinals payroll was completely acceptable, completely respectable. I've never had payroll. Can they spend more if they want to? Yeah, sure, they can. But do they need to? I don't think so. So they spent money by throwing it at the Major League roster with guys like Kyle Gibson, guys like Lance Lynn. And each of those guys had fine seasons. Lynn didn't pitch quite as much as I would have liked him to pitch due to injuries. That is my only issue with him. Gibson had the occasional blow-up start, but you kind of knew that's what you were going to get. I still think if they would have been a playoff team, Gibson would have been my third starter after Sonny Gray and Eric Fetty. So they did their job, but you can go get guys to do that version of the job, for the most part, out of your minor league system. If you are going to replace a Kyle Gibson and a Lance Lynn with some combination of Michael McGreevy, Gordon Graceffo, Quinn Matthews, whoever else, well, I don't think it's going to be that much of a drop-off, and I think it's going to get better as they move forward. So the Mets threw money at the Major League roster, a lot more money than the Cardinals threw at their Major League roster, different kind of player, but the point being is the Mets realized that you can't just do that. And we're in a period right now where the Cardinals also are learning, not maybe learning is the wrong word because they were at it before, they are resorting back to what they previously were, I guess would be the better way to say it, that they kind of lost their way there for a moment, and they, as a way just to compete at the Major League level as best as they could, they spent some money on the roster instead of spending some money in some other places, and that seems to be the thing that they are going to try to fix this offseason and moving forward with this player development reset. But Yeah, you can learn from these teams that it's good to do the small things. It's good to do the things in the background. It's good to have the logistical stuff in place, because the Mets are good at that now. The Dodgers are good at it. The Guardians are as good as any other team. The Yankees are pretty good. Yankees are pretty good at it. You know, we don't think about the Yankees in terms of player development and what they've got coming up from the minor league system, just because they've always sort of represented the large market spin team. But if you really dig in on the Yankees a little bit, they're doing all that stuff a whole lot better as well. And so that's the connecting fabric here between these four teams. Three of the four spend tons of money on the major league roster. Four of the four do things correctly to run their organization and to have players coming up and making an impact, and then they're able to pick and choose what they want to add via free agency. And if you're the Dodgers, you get to pick and choose Shohei Ohtani. If you're the Yankees, you get to pick and choose Gerrit Cole. So it's again, not apples to apples, but it is worth noting what's going on with these four teams. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Just a couple minutes left here in hour number one of the program. In hour number two, we're going to talk a lot of hockey as Andy Strickland's going to join us at about 7:20. Of course, he's part of the TV broadcast crew with the St. Louis Blues, who had a really solid opening three games on the road, and now they are back at home, or they are at home, not back at home, they are at home to open up the home portion of the schedule coming up tomorrow night. And then something that you may not have paid attention to over the weekend, but that was pretty darn cool, the Lindenwood men's ice hockey team went to Madison, Wisconsin to play two games against the number 9 Wisconsin Badgers. They win on Friday. They almost won on Saturday. Had a couple goal lead, couldn't hold on. They lost in overtime 3-2, but that's a heck of a start for Lindenwood hockey. So we are going to talk with their head coach, Bill Muckalt, coming up that hour in the 7 o'clock hour as well. I threw this out just because I was curious more than anything else. Throughout, for Cardinals fans, what team are you rooting for here in the playoffs? And I thought this question was especially notable post-Padres. Because now the Mike Schilt connection, I would guess that the Padres were the number one team for Cardinals fans when they were still alive. So I got five people texted in. Appreciate it. Not a huge surprise on this. Okay, so Kyle Sixta, three of the four teams are represented on the text. Can you guess which team is not represented?
It's between the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Okay.
I'm going to say it's the Yankees that no
correct.
One said.
Yep.
Because at least Dodgers, people might say Dodgers because of Edmund and Flaherty. Mm-hmm. But
Edmund, Flaherty, Shohei like no, is...
right.
Yeah.
No one around here, I feel like, is rooting for the Yankees.
No. Okay. So the Yankees were not represented. Got one vote for the Dodgers, two votes for the Mets, two votes for the Guardians. One of the people who voted for Cleveland said the Guardians, because their last World Series win was in 48 when Satchel Paige won it for them. They should have beat the Cubs, by the way.
They should have.
They should have beat the Cubs. That's of all the World Series of recent years, non-Cardinals World Series of my lifetime. That's the one that I lament the most. The fact that Cleveland did not win that World Series against the Cubs. But you can't go back and change history. I'm Matt Pauly. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Back at it as we get into the 7 o'clock hour. We've got a lot coming up this hour. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we're talking about, call, text, tweet 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900 is how you call or text, or you can tweet at me at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. In about 15 minutes or so, Andy Strickland is going to join us. Of course, you see him as part of the broadcast team covering Blues hockey on Bally Sports Midwest. We'll get his thoughts on the start for the Blues, and also get his thoughts on Oscar Sundquist and when we might see him. It was a good day for Sundquist. He was a full participant in practice this morning. First time we've been able to say that this year. He is continuing to come back from a torn ACL in his right knee. Before today, he had not been cleared for contact. He had been skating, but no contact. He is going to, Sundquist saw a doctor, and they're determining next step. So he skated as an extra forward on the fifth line today during practice. So we'll get more from Andy Strickland about that coming up in just a little while. We talked a bit about college football earlier. Coming off a weekend with all of those upsets, this was a different kind of weekend in college football. Clearly, there was a game of the week. And that's where number 3 Oregon knocks off number 2 Ohio State, 32-31. That might be a preview of the national title game. Probably not, but maybe for sure. Potentially a preview of something in the college football playoff, as both those teams do appear to be headed in that direction. Penn State got a nice win, winning at USC. That was a good win for them. Alabama was able to hold off South Carolina. Tennessee got a win in overtime against Florida. LSU got a good win against Ole Miss. Just kind of going through some of the games of note. We talked earlier about both Missouri and Illinois getting wins. What did we learn about either of those teams and either of those wins? We didn't learn a darn thing about Missouri in their win against UMass. Illinois beating Purdue, that's one of those where you go into it and they're thinking that it's not an easy win, but a win that they should definitely be able to have, and give credit where credit is due. Purdue did what they needed to do to make it a game, but Illinois got that win and they're still on the trajectory to have a pretty solid season. We also got a little bit of news when it comes to Missouri, because Luther Burden went down in that game. And according to an ESPN report, Luther Burden is expected to return to practice this week. He is expected to play against Auburn. This is after he suffered the shoulder injury. So that's the last thing in the world you would want, is go to UMass, a game that you're not even really sure why it's being played there, and you lose a guy like Burden. So that's really good news. That's really good news that Burden is expected to practice this week and in all likelihood is going to play against Auburn. Something I've been talking about a lot, and again, this wasn't my original thought, but it's something that I kind of glommed onto, and I think it's something that's continuing to be worth talking about. Before the season got started, I don't think you could have thought through a scenario where Missouri could go 10-2 in the regular season and not likely be a college football playoff participant. Playing in the SEC, going 10-2, I think you would have thought that there would have been enough games in there that even with some losses, that they would have been able to show who they are. And now all of a sudden, I'm just not convinced about that. Missouri now has one game left this season against a team that's currently in the top 25. Oklahoma got run off the field by Texas over the weekend, and Oklahoma fell out of the top 25. So right now, Missouri's got a game at Alabama coming up in a couple weeks. Outside of that, every single one of their opponents between now and the end of the season is not ranked. Now, Oklahoma certainly has an opportunity to get back into the rankings because they are just on the outside looking in. I would even suspect that Oklahoma likely is a top 25 team when the season comes to an end, and maybe they even get back in before the game against Missouri here in about 3 weeks. More like, let's see, that's on November 9th, so we're talking just under a month away. So Oklahoma has time. But that loss to Texas A&M is going to continue, especially if they win out except for the Alabama game. If they lose at Alabama, but they beat Auburn this weekend at home, they beat Oklahoma, they win at South Carolina, they win at Mississippi State, and they win at home against Arkansas, that's the rest of their schedule. If they do that and finish 10-2 and miss out on the college football playoff, you're going to be staring at that Texas A&M game and not feeling like you missed out on the opportunity to be a college football playoff team because you lost the game. But you're going to feel like you missed out on the college football playoff because of the nature in which you lost the game. And that's the frustrating thing about all this. So they're look, there's still a lot of opportunities here. And again, like I said, Oklahoma is maybe Oklahoma gets back in the top 25. You beat Oklahoma. You beat Oklahoma by a bunch at home. That becomes the most important game left on the schedule. Like, you have to win these other games. And Auburn this upcoming weekend obviously is an important game. But if you want to have a resume-building win outside of Alabama, because I don't think they're going to win in Alabama, if you want to have a resume-building win, Oklahoma is probably the best opportunity that you've got coming out of it. Some of the other news and notes coming out of college football from over the weekend. I don't know if you saw this. It was not a good look. Georgia coach Kirby Smart really shoved the quarterback for Mississippi State, Michael Van Buren Jr. And it looks purposeful. If you see the video, like, go look up the video. It looks absolutely purposeful that he ran up there. It was right there on the sideline, and he lifts both arms up, puts them into the kind of the side shoulder of Van Buren, and pushes off. So Kirby Smart has a media conference today. What does he say? He says he didn't even realize that he had shoved Van Buren. This is where sometimes coaches and people in authority of 18 to 22-year-olds really bother me, because, look, there's some really, really great coaches out there and really, really great leaders of men. And I'm not even trying to sit here. I don't know enough about Kirby Smart to say whether he's that or not. So this is an isolated incident. But could you imagine the reaction if a player does this? They're being held accountable. There's a flag being thrown. The coach is telling them, you can't do this. But then a coach does it. A coach goes and shoves a player from the other team, and he gets to get away with saying, I didn't even realize it. Smart said, quote, I went back and watched it. I didn't even realize that I had run into him. Yesterday I talked to Mike and told him that I had no intentions or ill will towards him at all. He went on to say, if you've ever been on the sideline, it's pandemonium. It's really pandemonium when you're trying to change personnel and you've only got 3 to 4 seconds to do it. We were bad off in a bad personnel grouping, and I was trying to get that changed. That's the excuse. Pandemonium. Player says that, it doesn't fly. Does not fly at all. But a coach can say that, and that's what he gets to say. We don't have time to go down this road, but the standard at which coaches hold student athletes compared to the standard at which many of them are held is the opposite of what it should be. The 50-year-old needs to be held to a higher standard than the 18 to 22-year-old, but the coach can go shove somebody and it's fine. The player can't. The coach can go leave for another job, but the player is a bad teammate if they leave for another program. Like, it's so unevenly yoked, and I don't like it. I've never liked it. And coaches, especially in college football, get this free pass that should not even exist. All right, we're talking hockey next. We're going to be joined by Andy Strickland. What to make of the Blues as they head into the first home game of the year tomorrow night. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King of OX.
Back at it here on a Monday night. The Blues are going to play their first home game of the season coming up tomorrow evening. Pretty good trip for them to start out the year, winning 2 out of 3, winning against Seattle and San Jose before losing against Vegas on Friday, and they'll match up against Minnesota coming up tomorrow. We're very happy to welcome on to the program. You see him as part of the broadcast crew for Blues games on Bally Sports Midwest. He is Andy Strickland. You follow him on Twitter at Andy Strickland. Andy, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm good. No problem whatsoever. How are you guys tonight?
We are good, and it's hard to take issue with what we saw from the Blues. I guess if you want to, you can say they got down in all three games and you'd like to see them play with a lead at some point for a longer amount of time. But all things considered, it doesn't matter when it happens, but going out west for three games and coming back with two wins, that's a pretty solid trip.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positives, and there's no question. I mean, to see a guy like, you know, Jordan Kyrou get off to a good start and play with confidence. Same with Buchnevich, Thomas. They're all playing, you know, at a high level right now. You know, you got an opportunity to see how Ryan Suter, you know, looks within the group. How's he going to fit? You know, like you said, you don't want to make a habit out of coming from behind, but, you know, at least they were able to pick up some points. And when you win games in that fashion where you do have to come from behind, you know, that can also galvanize a team and bring a team together when you're winning, you know, exciting games like that. And they almost beat, you know, Vegas, obviously. And Vegas is going to be one of the top teams in the league once again. Last season, the Blues, you know, had issues against teams like San Jose. Big reason as to why they missed the playoffs. So regardless, coming from behind or not, you know, you can't afford to lose those games. And now they put themselves in good position. Listen, they've got four games in a row coming up here at home at the Enterprise Center. They were a good home team last season. It allowed them to kind of stay in the mix, and they're going to need to play good hockey at home once again this year.
There's so much focus on the three goals in a minute 55 against Seattle and then coming back from three goals down in the third period against San Jose. And each of those things are great accomplishments and great things that they did. I was most impressed by the fact that they went into a third period in Seattle with a one-goal lead and were able to protect it and really lock down defensively. Is that third period against Seattle defensively maybe what they really need if they want to be a team that exceeds expectations this year?
Well, you're going to have to play good defense, but, you know, Jordan Binnington was obviously, you know, great in that game, too. He made some huge saves for this team, even going back to the first period, too, where the team didn't really show up, right, against Seattle. They weren't very good in the first period at all. So, you know, he was able to keep their head above water and, you know, to come out of that first period of that game, you know, all tied up at 0-0, you know, all credit to him. And, you know, listen, you got to have good goaltending. I think defensively, the Blues are built to play good defense. You know, the team with so many new players right now, I was interested to see how it was all going to come together. But for the most part, you know, four lines that are pretty responsible. I think they like their fourth line right now. It's going to be interesting. Because you've got Walker, you've got Foxa, you know, you've got Toropchenko, but you got a couple bodies that are out of the lineup right now. You know, Texier obviously is going to get back in there, maybe miss another game. He got put on IR today. But Sundqvist is a guy who's a very good defensive player. But you know, listen, the Blues, they're going to have to play good defense. It starts with goaltending. But they've got some veterans, you know, back there, you know, contributing offense now too, by the way. They're starting to get some goals from, you know, their defensemen. But they've got players who understand how to play time and score. And what I mean by that is, you know, when it's third period and it's time to hunker down, you're trying to protect the lead. They know how to, you know, put pucks in good areas, get good line changes, all that type of stuff that, you know, the details that come with playing winning hockey. And they show they can do that.
Sundqvist was back on the ice today as a full participant as he finally got cleared for contact. They haven't really put much of a timeline on when he might return. You made reference to the fourth line. They've gotten good production. Like, everybody seems very happy with that line right now. Does the fact that the fourth line is doing their job, does that give the Blues maybe a little bit of a extra time and extra runway as they get Sundqvist ready to return?
Maybe. You know, there's a possibility of that because they are happy. I mean, Foxa obviously has been real good. You know, Sundqvist has been skating really since day one of training camp. So he just got cleared, I think, on October 10th. So, listen, getting a practice in today was huge. He's going to have an opportunity to get another one in. You know, you would think on Wednesday, Friday, you know, would he be available as soon as next Tuesday? You know, I guess time will tell if that's the case. But I wouldn't think they're overly pushing it. He's been cleared for contact now. And like I said, he's been skating for several weeks. So from a conditioning standpoint, I think he's ready to go. And getting in practices are going to be huge. So he participated fully in practice today. But, you know, what do you do now? Because, you know, you've got, you know, Shen kind of, you know, he's been kind of going back and forth, right, from being a center to playing wing. They like him in that three hole. They like Buchnevich, obviously, in that two hole. But Foxa has locked down a center position, too. Sundqvist is primarily a center in terms of his experience playing in the NHL, but they could move him to wing too, be a little less taxing on his knee, in the early going. So they've got some flexibility. Kapanen's coming out of the lineup. You know, they still have Bolduc up here. We'll see what his, you know, how secure his roster spot is. He's going to get another opportunity to play tomorrow night to make a case for himself. But they've got flexibility with sending him down. You know, can Nathan Walker be a guy that you expect to play game in and game out? All these questions are going to get answered in due time, and it remains to be seen. But I would expect Sundqvist to get back in there when he's healthy.
It's a good problem to have because Sundqvist is coming back. Brandon Saad's going to return. That's what results in Kapanen likely to be out of the lineup. Texier does not seem to be a long-term sort of thing. So at some point, the roster crunch is the roster crunch, and there's going to be some decisions to be made.
Oh, 100%. And you know, Saad getting back here, you know, getting him back in the lineup obviously is huge too, like you just mentioned. And he's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised eventually find his way to playing with Buchnevich and Kyrou. Kyrou loves playing with Saad. They've got really good chemistry with one another. He's showing great chemistry right now with Buchnevich. But I know Robert Thomas is happy to get a guy like Saad, you know, on his line. He's been playing with Neighbors and Holloway. You know, two guys who play, you know, like to play that direct north game. You know, Thomas, you know, probably if he had it his way, you know, could play with that, you know, play that give and go style, play with guys who do think offense and play, you know, the offensive game at a high level. I think Saad, you know, is going to bring some speed and some creativity and some skill to that line that maybe has been lacking a little bit with Robert Thomas, even though he still found a way to be productive. I think he's got 4 points here in the first three games. So that'll give you some depth. But yeah, I mean, they've got some hard decisions. But at the end of the day, you can kind of see how it's all going to come together. I think they have some flexibility with Walker. And like I said, with Bolduc. Bolduc, you know, listen, he's going to get another opportunity tomorrow. He had chances in the last game. He's going to have to capitalize on those. But I think the plan will probably be to have him come out. But, again, you hate to say that because, you know, that's how they play the games. We'll see how he plays tomorrow night. And he could change things pretty quickly in terms of their thought process, you know, moving forward with him.
We're talking with Andy Strickland from Bally Sports Midwest. Last thing for you, Drew Bannister doesn't have the interim tag anymore like he did when he was coaching last season. Does that free him up at all? Like, have you noticed any changes with him? And maybe it's not even an in-game coaching thing, but just a level of comfort in the way he handles things. Is there any difference between Drew Bannister right now and the guy that you saw take over from an interim basis last year?
Listen, I think it's a good question. I mean, the easy answer is no, because he is, you know, his interactions with the media are the same. I've spent some time with him away from the media. He pretty much acts the same. But I think it's human nature to know that you have the job, but he only has a 2-year contract. And he knows he's still being evaluated. You know, nothing's guaranteed, you know, moving forward. He wants to be a coach of in the NHL for a long time. And I think his focus is now just doing the job this season. But you also can never relax. You know what I'm saying? When you're a head coach in the NHL, especially when you're trying to establish yourself as an NHL head coach, I don't think you can ever think that way. But he's the exact same to me, to be honest with you, in terms of, you know, how he's going about his day-to-day. I think this guy is an underrated coach. He's got a firm handle of the bench. He's got great command on the ice during practice. He's got a firm understanding of the current concepts of how the game is played from an X's and O's standpoint, the way he handles his staff. You know, he's been coaching for a long time, and he's had success at pretty much every level, including the American League, where he took the Blues farm team to the championship round just 2 years ago. So he's won a lot. And I can tell you this, he's super confident in his ability to coach. He knows he can coach at this level. And his record going back to last season, what was he, 33-19-5, something like that? After taking over, people asked, hey, you know, what were some of the deciding factors into the Blues electing to bring back Drew Bannister? Well, number one is his record. He won a lot. They were on a 100-point pace pretty much from the time that he took over. The power play drastically improved. The goals against went down. The PK was better. You know, all the different statistics that you point to that you attribute to coaching – all got better. So he knows he can coach, and this is certainly an opportunity this season to prove that to a lot of people.
He is Andy Strickland. In addition to being part of Bally Sports Midwest, the Cam and Strick podcast, I see you're going to have Mike Keenan on the show.
Oh, man. Yeah, we did that interview today, and we don't typically do them the day before, so it's fresh, man. But it was a it was a fun conversation. We've had him on before, but we probably had him on within the first five episodes that we had when we started doing the podcast back in 2019. I mean, it was early in our tenure. So we weren't doing video at the time. So it was a different conversation than one we had before. But we get into a number of things, man. If you're not just a Blues fan, you're going to want to pay attention. But we get into his relationship with Gretzky and Hall and Pronger, Grantier, in addition to a lot of stories from his stops in other cities, man. It's a fun conversation, so hopefully people will tune in and listen to that. You can check it out on YouTube, too.
Awesome. Very good. The Cam and Strick podcast, it's podcast video as well. Andy, always appreciate you taking some time with us, and hopefully we can catch up with you every once in a while during the season.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Anytime. Take care.
Awesome. That's Andy Strickland joining us on the program. Yeah, Mike Keenan, when you... Okay, so if we were to do the old Mount Rushmore, the low-hanging fruit sports talk radio segment, if we were to do the Mount Rushmore of hated St. Louis sports figures, Bill Bidwell would be on that list, Stan Kroenke would be on that list, easily. Is Mike Keenan on that list? There has to be a baseball, like, there has to be a baseball person on that list for sure. Does Keenan make it? I don't know. Maybe we will hold that for another day and do the low hanging fruit sports radio segment. Up next, we're going to talk some Lindenwood hockey. Yeah, Lindenwood hockey. What a weekend they had. We'll explain all that coming up in just a moment here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. I'll tell you what, something pretty special happened over the course of the weekend. The Lindenwood hockey team played their first regular season game of the year. They went to Madison, Wisconsin to take on the number 9 Badgers. And what a weekend for them. They win, first ever win against a nationally ranked opponent for the program on Friday night. And then they come up with an overtime loss on Saturday. But all in all, that's one heck of a weekend and a really good start for head coach Bill McCall, who joins us right now on the program. Coach, thank you for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Hey, my pleasure. Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this was an exciting moment for your program, and obviously early on in your tenure. Just what were the emotions after coming up with that kind of win to start the season?
Yeah, obviously extremely proud of our team and the guys just for their buy-in and how hard they've been working. And you know, maybe a lot of people wouldn't give us, a belief of winning a game in an environment like that against a real tough opponent, a nationally ranked opponent. But for us, it's about, you know, the buy-in and commitment to each other and the belief to go out and collectively accomplish something. So with that, I think it's a real special moment. There's no question it's a signature win for our program.
You have played there before, obviously. You spent some time on the staff at the University of Michigan before coming to Lindenwood. So was there some comfort for you here at the beginning matching up against a Big Ten opponent?
Oh, I don't know if it'd be so much comfort, but obviously familiar with the Big Ten, familiar with Coach Hastings and his staff and you know, battled against them for years. So really familiar with that, but definitely, you know, as far as familiar with the style of play and everything like that. So I think that helped us a little bit in knowing your opponent and having a game plan.
When you talk so much about belief, you and your coaching staff, as you got ready for the season, what kind of things were you doing? How do you go about making sure that you do have a group that can go in there and truly believe in themselves?
Yeah, I think having 18 new faces and a new coach, a lot of things that we were doing with our structure is we video every practice and really try to evaluate with our practices and teaching moments to watch back and share with our guys with positives and areas for growth. So I think that was really, you know, helpful for us to get us up to speed and get us prepared, for such a tough opponent early on in the season.
I know nobody's ever going to be happy with a loss, even in overtime. But in from my perspective, looking at this, we see these moments in sports, especially in hockey, college hockey, two-game series, where maybe a team comes up with an upset on Friday. And so often the next day, it's very, very one-sided in the other direction. And it wasn't one-sided the next night. You guys had a lead in the game until Wisconsin was able to even it up in the third period. And then they score, obviously, in overtime. But what did it say about your club that they came out that second night in a row and put a very competitive effort on the ice again against Wisconsin?
Yeah, no question. We talk a lot about that. That's one of the things that's the hardest things to come back with sometimes, especially with this group and just getting together with our expectations and the standards that we set forth. But, you know, I was really proud of our bounce back and our effort. We had a two-goal lead. We got into penalty trouble. You know, that's a tough recipe to kill that many penalties off. So we did some things that, you know, we're trying to shore up and improve on. But the effort was there, and we easily could have won both of those games. But, you know, just as far as the competitiveness, the bounce back, the resiliency in our group, you know, I think that shows volumes about our character.
What do you do as a coaching staff to make sure that this level of play does continue, that this isn't just a really nice weekend against a ranked team, but turns into the start of a really good season?
No question. That's consistency, right? You go into the supermarket or the gas station, you get a Gatorade or a bottle of Coke. A bottle of Coke has that same fizz. It tastes the same. The product's the same day in, day out. So our consistency as a team, we want that fizz and we want that pop every day. So you got to learn to bring that every day. And as a little reminder today in practice that, hey, we got to keep going with that. And you know, there's going to be days where you maybe don't have as much execution, but you want to try and bring that energy and effort day in, day out. And that's what we're striving to do.
When you were brought in, the word championship was used and high caliber and things like that. What, as you assess this program, and even going back to when you were considering the job, and now that you're in the job, what can this Lindenwood hockey program turn into?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal is ultimately to be a nationally ranked team that can compete and get into the tournament and have some consistency and strive to play at the highest level. I think there were a lot of things that were really good. I think, Rick Zombo did a really nice job in bringing this program from a club program and getting it to the Division One level. Try and recruit some higher-end players, try and recruit at a higher level. And I say that respectfully, but, you know, we got to continue to raise the bar. There's just so many areas that go into building a championship culture and a team that can be naturally ranked. And it's there's so much. We've got to reach out to the hockey community. We've got to get people to buy in and invest in our brand. And that's the one thing, you know, to our listeners out there is we have Division One hockey in St. Louis, 42 years that it's been gone. It's now at the Division One level, and we're 16th at the Centene Center in Maryland Heights, and it's going to be a great venue and a great opportunity to see great college hockey, great college hockey games and great players at the college level.
Up next, you head to Air Force. I spent 6 years working around Air Force Athletics. Frank Sartori is a gem of college hockey. That's a cadet ice arena is a tough place to play. That's a really good program out there. And it's a fun place to play as well in the sense that you're matching up against a service academy. What's the excitement level for this team as they go into a matchup against Air Force?
Well, there's no question, Frank's a legendary coach, been at a long time. He'll have his team, on their toes and ready to play. And it's going to be a physical, heavy brand of hockey. Obviously, we're excited about going out there. I think it's good, too. We're going to catch a football game on Saturday out there as well. So it should be an entertaining weekend, but it's a business trip, and you know, last week's over, and now it's on to Air Force and putting a game plan together and then going out and executing it.
Well, Coach, congratulations on the win. Good to get to know you a little bit, and hopefully we can talk to you again down the line.
Awesome. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That's Bill McCulty, is the head coach of the Lindenwood men's ice hockey team. And again, what a great weekend for them. A win and an overtime loss against number 9 Wisconsin. What a way to start the season, but also what a way to start a tenure for Coach McCault after he was named the next head coach of Lindenwood Hockey back in April. And now here he is knocking off the top 10 team in the nation. All right, one more break. We will come back and we'll wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it on Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we do start to wrap things up here for a Monday night. It's been a fun show this evening. We've got full shows this week every night but Thursday. Thursday we'll do 30 minutes and then get out of here for Thursday night football. But 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock each and every night. Coming up next, you do not want to go anywhere. You're going to have to deal with a little bit more of me, but luckily I will be mitigated out by Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. We've started doing these video roundtable shows that we do during the day. And maybe you caught it earlier today if you follow along with the KMOX sports social media channels, where it was a roundtable today with myself, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas. Like I said, generally Tom Ackerman is involved. He's a little bit under the weather. Tom, we hope you start feeling better sooner than later. So it was the three of us. And we like doing the video component of it, and you can certainly watch it and everything, but we also repurpose it for audio purposes. A lot of purposing going on right there. We repurpose it for audio purposes. We do that, and that's going to be coming up in just a few moments. So a full hour with myself talking all things baseball, hockey, football with Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler. That's going to be coming up. We're I can't give away too much here at the moment, but we're trying to expand that part of what we do. And that 12 o'clock noon hour is something where, you know, you're on your lunch break or something. You pull out your phone and you can watch KMOX folks talk about sports. So that's the idea behind it. And then we bring it back for you at 8 o'clock this evening. So be tuned in for that. Did want to mention this real quickly before we get out of here for the day. The AP Top 25 preseason poll is out. Is there anything more worthless than the preseason college basketball poll? The football one, kind of worthless. The basketball one is completely and totally worthless. And it's really because of the direction that college athletics has gone here recently with the transfer portal and name, image, likeness. And again, I'm not putting any of that stuff down. That's not the point of what I'm saying here. The point is, we don't know what any of these teams look like. So many teams have to go out and recreate themselves on an every year basis. That's the world of college athletics we live in right now because of NIL and because of the transfer portal. Now, would I like to see players stay longer in college and for there to be more continuity from 1 year to the next? Yeah, that'd be great. But that's not happening right now. I don't know if we're ever going to get back to that. And who am I to tell an 18 to 22-year-old to, A, don't go get paid more money, and don't go to a place where you think is a better opportunity. Now, that being said, there is also a dark side to the transfer portal. The number of kids that go into the transfer portal and don't find a home on the other side, it's a healthy percentage. To the parents out there that maybe are dealing with kids that are thinking about transferring, just make sure that your kid feels pretty good about them finding another opportunity. But I can tell you, I've been watching the percentages here. It is somewhat remarkable, the number of kids, and I think basketball is the number one sport where this happens. I don't know that for sure. That's an assumption on my part. But basketball certainly is a culprit. If it's not number one, it's got to be up there. Basketball seems to be the sport where kids go into the transfer portal and they don't come out. The grass isn't always greener, and sometimes there's no grass at all to go over there. So if you've got yourself a situation that you're in that you're not happy with, you should probably be very, very, very sure that there's going to be something on the other side. So all that being said, we don't know what these teams look like. Like, to put that in perspective, last year, Missouri, they were coming off that fantastic season in Dennis Gates' first year at Missouri. They were receiving votes in both the AP poll and the coaches poll. Of course they were, right? And they just weren't very good. Every year, as these teams go out and completely turn themselves over and their roster looks totally different, you don't know what these teams are going to look like. Kansas is the preseason number one team. Unfortunately, that's always a pretty good bet to go with Kansas. They've got a pretty good track record there in Lawrence, which is not great. They get 31st place votes. Alabama is the preseason number two team. Of note, Illinois, they are the top team receiving votes, so they are the de facto number 26 team in the nation. Also, St. Louis U getting some votes. They got 9 votes. They're a couple spots in front of VCU when you do that, which is notable. So good to see some people from a national perspective looking at SLU and seeing that, believing that they could have a pretty good season, which we absolutely expect them to have a very good season in the first year for Josh Schertz. We'll start talking a whole lot more college basketball here with us being just a few weeks away from the start of the season. All right, that's going to do it for the program. Again, our Camo X Sports Roundtable on the way next, as I've got a discussion with both Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler for the entire 8 o'clock hour. You're going to want to hear every moment of that. That's on the way next, and then I'll be back with you again for another Graybar Sports Open Line tomorrow night right here on KMOX.